Welcome to Signs from the Other Side with Fern Rone. I'm your host, Fern Rone, and this is the place to share stories of signs and messages received from the other side. Today, I am joined by author Carolyn Ritter Aspenson. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Carolyn is the author of many books, including contemporary romances and mysteries, including the Angela Panther mystery series. She is also a mom, wife, dog mom, cat mom, and as it says on her website, a coffee shop people watcher, like all good writers. She is also active on social media, especially Facebook, where she manages two groups for writers. And we met on Facebook. I think it was in the Chick Lit group at first.
I believe so.
But you're also in my Believers in Signs group, where you shared one of your incredible stories, and I was like, I have to have you on my podcast, so I'm so happy that we're doing this. And you say something great on your, so I was doing all of my Carolyn Ritter Aspenson research, and I didn't realize, I mean, I knew you were a prolific writer, but I didn't realize how prolific, which I'm going to have to get into how you find the time to write so many books. But what I also love is that you say in the About section, my stories focus on relationships, whether they're between friends, family members, couples, townspeople, or strangers, because ultimately it's relationships that make a story, which I could not agree more. I love that. It makes the world go round, and there's something to learn from everyone. And I think there's, I'm sure you would agree, because you're a spiritual person, I think everyone we meet, we have something to learn from, and we're supposed to meet them for whatever reason on our journey.
Definitely, definitely.
Do you base a lot of characters from people in your life? Am I remembering correctly that the ghost in the Angela Panther series is based on your mom?
Yes, it's Fran is the character's name, and she is a slightly exaggerated version of my mom, who passed away in 2009. So. But definitely very similar, just a little bit exaggerated.
Right, which is the best kind.
She's a good, she's everybody's favorite character too, which is kind of neat. So.
So we started talking in the Believers in Signs group, but you then sent me kind of, you know, I like to have like a little bit of an outline sometimes of, so just so, especially people who are like, I have a ton of stories.
Sure.
You could probably talk forever. And so I always like to have a little bit maybe of an outline just so that we can keep it under a certain amount of time. But I think I'm going to end up having to have you come back, because I think you have so many stories and they're so great. And I just, it's so obvious that you just get it, and I love it. But I want to start with the stories where you've seen people, which Sylvia Brown, I think it was Sylvia Brown, who would have to keep a light on as a child, because she had to keep all of these spirits were basically keeping her up, and she put the light on, they kind of went away. And I do always, you know, they say, like, if you kind of feel like someone's behind you, you're sensing someone, you know.
Yeah, somebody usually is, whether you can see them or not. Yeah.
So you've seen people for a long time, including your grandmother, which was probably the first person that you saw. And she died before you were born, right?
Yes, she died in 1949. And I was born much later. But I did. I'm going to stick by that. If you ask me my age, I'll lie. When I was a kid, we lived in a two-story house, but it was kind of like a story and a half. Upstairs was just my bedroom, my parents' bedroom, and a bathroom, and then the rest of the bedrooms and the rest of the house were all downstairs. So the opposite side of the house was where everybody hung out, and my bedroom was up in the far opposite corner. So, you know, I would go to bed, my dad would tuck me in, and I'd be a little scared at first because I was a kid, and, you know, it was far away because the house seemed so big. And so he would leave the hall light on and close my door, just leaving it open a crack, you know, just enough that I could have a little bit of light in. And I don't remember when it started, because I didn't even know that what was going on at that point. It was just part of my everyday, my every night sleep, you know. A woman in a long white gown would be kind of, in my books, I use the word hovering, but, you know, kind of hovering or floating in the hallway. And she would tap the door and it would open all the way. And she would just look in at me and smile. And sometimes she was alone. Sometimes she was with a group of people. And she had this, you know, the flappers style hair, you know, the short kind of, yes, she had a flapper style haircut. It was blonde and she was not scary at all. She was very gentle. She seemed very gentle and just smiled at me, you know, just smiled at me and would stand out there or hover out there what seemed like for a long time. And I would fall asleep and I never felt nervous. And my father didn't talk much about his mother. She died when he was 21, and it was a pretty tragic death. She was hit by a train. So,
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. I can't even imagine. So when we would talk about her, it was very emotional for him, and he didn't like to show that, you know, especially to his little girl. So, years later, I found a picture of this woman, and I was in high school, and my parents were actually divorced, and my mom and I were moving from one apartment into a house, and I said, I was packing up with her and I said, who is this woman? I said, I used to dream about her when I was a kid. And she said, that's your grandmother, Carolyn, your dad's mom. And that's who I'm named after. And I went, holy cow. Absolutely floored.
It all clicked.
And I never thought about it at that point, you know, up to that point, but I saw her all the time.
Isn't that amazing?
You know, it was amazing. It was, and I told my mother, I said, I don't know what to do with this. She said, that probably was her coming to check on you because you're named after her. You know, you're her only son's only daughter. You shouldn't be scared by that. And, I wasn't, yeah. It was just, you know, of course, at that point, then every night when I would go to bed, I think I was 17 at the time, I would try to see her. She wasn't there. She wasn't coming around anymore. It was just when I was younger. So that was my first clue.
And I think they come to kids. I think kids are obviously more open. And I think kids often, you know, kids often have imaginary friends that I don't think are always so imaginary. And then as we get older,
we just
put up blockers and get more scared and are less open. That's amazing. That's so amazing. And your kids have seen in your house, they've seen a man.
Yes. The man, I don't even know how to process it still. And it's been, my son is 20 now. And
this is a big one.
Yeah. it just fascinates me. When we moved into this house when he was 5, and he's 20 now. So we've been here for 15 years. And I was in the basement one day. And I came up to my husband and I said, I feel like there is a man in the basement. And I said, I can't see him directly, but I can see him out of the corner of my eye. And when I turn my head, he's gone. And my husband's very much a skeptic. He believes that I believe, which drives me crazy, but that's another story. He said, what does he look like? And I said, he's got almost like an old uniform of some sort on, with like a military uniform, maybe like a soldier, you know, from like the Civil War or something. And not that I actually knew what that would look like, but that's what I was seeing. That's what I saw.
Right.
So I wrote it off and then didn't think much about it. And then later on, I told him that I felt the same person, the same man up in our bedroom. And then maybe a week or so later, my daughter asked if she could sleep with the door open, because we always close their doors. We have a two-story family room and it's loud up there. And I said, you can, but you know, it's going to be loud. And she said, well, I feel like there's a man in the corner of my bedroom looking at me, watching me. And you know, that's a little scary. So I said, door's open, that's fine. We'll open the door. So, you know, I went in there, my husband and I went in there, then we see nothing, you know, we feel nothing at that point. And then she says that. And then I'm not kidding, maybe 3 days later, my son, who at the time was 5, he came into my bedroom. I had walked in there and was doing something and then sat on my bed. And he came in about 5 minutes later and he said, who's that man in here? And I said, what man? And he said, the man that just walked in. And I went, what does that man look like? Did you know? And so he described a man in an old, He said it's an old military or an old army uniform is what he said. He said, like the stuff that daddy watches on TV. So I said, is he still here? And he said, no, he walked into the bathroom and he's gone. And I thought, well, did he have, and you know, I thought that was odd. And I said, did he have a hat on? And he described exactly the same man that I was seeing out of the corner of my eye. So I went back to my daughter and said, what did that guy look like? The man that you feel like is watching you, what did he look like? And she described the same thing. And I thought, well, that's not a coincidence. And my kids switched bedrooms 3 or 4 years later. And I went into Justin's room, which was the room that the man had been in for my daughter. And he said, Mom, do you see him over there? And I said, the man in the corner? And he said, yeah. And I said, I don't see him. And I could feel him in my bedroom in the basement, but not in any other room. My son could just saw him everywhere in the house. And he still, he will call me and say, you know, the man's here. So I feel like the man is connected to him somehow. And he thought it was my uncle. And I said, it's not, it's definitely not my uncle. But he called
and
me last week.
Your son's 20 now.
He's 20. Yeah. And he called me last week and he said, I said, have you seen the man? He said, yeah, I just saw him last night. He said, he just showed up in my room and disappeared. And I mean,
he's in college,
he's in college and he has had many experiences and that spirit stays with him. And I don't know why. I've gone to a couple different mediums to find out and have, you know, he's actually talked to him when the next time he saw him in my bedroom again, you know, different time, I said, he said, he's here again. And I said, talk to him. And he did. He asked him his name, but he said, Mom, it's like he doesn't know I'm here. He doesn't hear me. So yeah. And but now he says that when he sees him at his apartment or when he saw him a few weeks ago at my stepmom's house, he said he will stare right at him and say hello to him and the guy will acknowledge him, not with words, but he knows somehow he knows that the man knows he's acknowledging him.
Right.
And
this man is having a good time at parties. He's been calling your son in college. He's like at frat parties.
I know.
And a good time.
I know. And my son's not at all worried. He doesn't get uncomfortable about it at all. So
yeah.
Said, well,
and you're in Georgia. Do you know if the land? I'm curious if the land that your house is on, maybe that if you know the history of it.
That was the first thing I checked because we do live in North Georgia and there's a lot of Civil War things, you know, memorials and things around here. But as far as I can go back, this was my property is originally a farmhouse and the farm is still, we live in a big subdivision and the farmhouse is still there. And I'm right next to that, but there's nothing that I can find that there was anything during, you know, the Civil War or any time after that. But there have been a lot of different people that have had similar experiences in my town specifically for their land. So who knows what, you know, actually was here, you know, or what happened here. But he doesn't seem unhappy. He just seems like he's hanging out.
Like he's hanging out and he loves your family.
It's amazing.
You know, I know it's amazing. And I know there's negative spirits and there's positive spirits. And I come at it from that most people on earth, I think, are mostly at their core good. Everyone's in a different stage in their evolution of their soul, but I think at the core, you know, we're all one and everyone is at their core good. And I feel the same with spirits. I feel like this man doesn't sound certainly like he's anywhere near being a negative spirit. It sounds like he loves your son and loves your family and just is here. And time is different. You know, time is such a human construct. For them, following you and your family, your whole life could just be a blip on the radar for him, and it's just a good short time that he's here with you. I know.
It amazes me. And you know, I spoke to somebody about it once because I was worried that there was some kind of negative, you know, and she said I feel nothing negative because we've staged the house. And, you know, we wanted him to be where he needed to be, you know, and wherever that, you know, wherever the belief system
I would do the
is,
same
we wanted
thing.
Him to go.
Yeah.
And so, and we tried and he didn't feel like leaving.
You guys are too much fun.
Yeah. And so now I look at him as somebody that's watching over my son.
Yeah.
You know? And that works. that works for me.
Amazing. And you're so you mentioned your mom passed in 2009, and I'm looking at my notes. Your dad passed in 2010. What a time
yeah,
for
tough.
You.
Yeah, that was tough.
Oh,
that was
man.
It, you know, when people say that, they say, "Oh, that happens when people are married a long time." And I laugh because they were divorced for 30 years.
Right.
But
right.
No, that's not why. But yeah, it was a tough time. My mother was diagnosed with cancer, and we knew that she wasn't going to live. My father he had COPD and he was ill, but we didn't expect it to happen how it did. So
yeah.
it was a tough time, but,
yeah,
I had,
sorry.
Yeah, it, you know, it's now I can talk about it just fine, but looking back, oh, I ate a lot for my grief.
Yeah. However you have to get through it. It's interesting that, you know, people would say that not knowing that they were divorced. And then when they did come through on the same day, it was kind of like you had this, I mean, you can tell the story, but there was a little bit of a not competition, but you were kind of like, you're not going to let her show you up, are you?
Yes.
So if you could tell that story, I love it.
Okay. Yeah, this one was so blatantly obvious to me that if anybody ever questioned it, it's just, to me, it's so obvious. I talk to my parents all the time because I am certain that when I die, if I didn't, my mother would never let me live it down. So I talk to them all the time. And I was going to Hobby Lobby, and as I was driving there, I talked to them out loud because I feel like that's the easiest way for me. And I said, I need a sign. You guys got to give me something. I don't know if you're around. I want to make sure you're still around. And I don't care what it is. Just give me a sign. So I went into Hobby Lobby and literally forgot about that within minutes because I got into all of the wonderful crafts and just was sharing. And as I was leaving, obviously the registers were right by the front doors. And as I said, my mom's name was Rita. And as I was leaving, I'm going out the first section of doors. On the intercom, it says, "Rita, come to the front." And I went, holy cow. That's not a coincidence. Mm-hmm. And so then I go, I'm walking out to the car.
Her.
Yeah, exactly.
You were just in the car, which I always tell people, talk out loud to them. They're listening. And most people are comfortable doing it in their car. You're alone. That's the perfect place.
Yes. And then I was a little snooty about when I was asking them for signs because I hadn't felt that had any in a while. So I was a little, maybe she felt a little pressure. So as I'm walking out to the car, I said, I'm literally talking out loud. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Dad, you're going to let her show you up like that? Because that was a good one." And my father, I know, within all of my heart that he would not let that pass. And so I got in the car and I turned on the radio, and I have satellite radio, and I think I had it on. I don't even know what I had it on, but I turned on the radio and Sweet Caroline came on, and that was by Neil Diamond. And that was, my father told me when I was a kid that he had Neil Diamond write that song for me. So, which was a lie, but I didn't know. But, so that was our song at my wedding. Yeah. I mean, for years, I really believed that. But, so I knew I got in and I turned the radio on and that song came on and I went, "Well, I'll be darned." And it just was, it was so obvious to me.
Oh, I know the story. I read the story in your email and I have chills. It's so perfect.
It just was one of those, this can't be coincidence. It's not.
Yeah.
It's too blatantly obvious. And that would be my parents. And I know everybody says that about their parents, but they would be, the ones that made, okay, you're giving me a hard time. Here, take it.
right.
Be obvious.
Here, you're pain in the neck, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. And, I believe it was them. I don't have any, there was no question in my mind.
Of course.
So.
Mm-hmm. Because what are the chances that you would be speaking to them? And then Rita's really not a common name.
No,
Rita, over the loudspeaker, Rita, come to the front. And then even if you had, I talk to myself all the time, but even if you had said it in your head, the communication is different with them, but even if you had said it in your head, now it's your turn. You had just been speaking to them in the car, and even if that hadn't happened with Rita come to the front, if you had just heard Sweet Caroline that day, that was what you danced to with your father at your wedding. It's just amazing. So I just love it so much. Speaking of dad and cars, there was another sighting, I guess you could call it.
Oh, yeah.
With your dad and his car.
Yep. When he passed away, he was in Indiana. So I flew out there and then I drove home and my stepmom said, just take your dad's car. And he had this adorable little Mercedes convertible. I said, oh, yeah, I'll take
no problem.
So exactly. So I had it for probably 3 months, you know, until she decided what she wanted to do with it. And I went to a boot camp outside, you know, and I got there early one day and was walking, just went for a walk in the neighborhood. And as I'm walking back to the car, my dad was a smoker and he would sit in the car and finish his cigarette before he went in somewhere, which I never quite understood. Mm-hmm. But I saw him in the car in the parking lot with a cigarette in his hand and his baseball cap on. And I mean, clear as day, he was sitting in the driver's seat, clear as day. And I stopped because I didn't want the moment to pass, you know, but I wanted him to stay in there. And honestly, at first I was confused, like, what, how, and then I realized,
what's going on?
This is. And then he was gone. But I mean, he loved that car.
There.
He was there.
And it's perfect that it was his mother who you would see when you were young. And then it was him giving you just a glimpse of, I'm still here.
Yeah.
The way you knew me, smoking, baseball cap.
Yep.
My car. Yep. It's another sign. And beautiful. And it's perfect the way it happens. Your uncle, was your uncle who passed in 96 his brother or your mom's brother?
No, he's actually my mom's brother-in-law, but he'd been around, you know, since before I was born. He's definitely my uncle. And he was my godfather. Yeah. And he and I were very, very close. Yeah. I have, gosh, I don't even remember what I told you because I have so many stories about him. Which one did I tell you about?
Oh, yeah, the earrings.
Oh,
he gave
you
a pair of diamond earrings, which he sounds like a very nice uncle.
Well, yeah, they're not big, but they're, and I'm wearing them now, as a matter of fact. I come from an Italian family, so he always, the expression was, I know a guy. You want this? I know a guy. So
you're talking to the right person. I know.
Yep. Yep. And I have them in a little, I don't know what it is. It's a little box that, you know, a ceramic box thing that I put my, you know, some of my everyday jewelry in that I wear often. And I always am very particular about these because I don't want to lose them. You know, they're important to me. And I put them in there and, you know, they weren't there. And I was in hysterics because I had just vacuumed up there a short while before that. And I didn't know what was going on. You know, I thought I blamed my daughters, which is my, you know, because they always steal my jewelry. And they both swore up and down they didn't take them. And I didn't think that they did. You know, they knew.
Yeah, but you were frantic.
Yeah, I was. And I, you know, I was literally crying and asking him, you know, please help me find these. And they showed up right on the floor. I mean, it was right on the floor, right by the dresser. And I had vacuumed there. At the time, I still had two dogs, different ones, and a cat. So I vacuum all the time. So, you know, it wasn't like I had vacuumed a few days before that. I had been vacuuming and it just was one of those, you know, and
one of those
I
things.
Looked
so
up,
they were there one day. Oh, go ahead.
Yep. And just out of nowhere, they just appeared, literally. And, you know,
in front
of
the dresser.
Yep. And I thought, wow. And I just, you know, I always look up at the ceiling. I go, you know, thanks, uncle.
Yeah. That's another way that they come through. It's so funny because Howie and I have a very dear friend whose wife passed from cancer very young. She was only 37. And we were talking about her recently. And he said, she played such a trick on me the other day. He was cooking and he was looking for a pot and he couldn't find it anywhere. Going nuts, leaving the kitchen, coming back in, going through all the drawers, and then leaves comes back in and it's right there. And John Edward, who's my favorite medium, I always say, you know, I'm so loyal to him, I won't interview any other mediums. He's my favorite. He's the only one I trust. He talks about that too. He says they'll give you kind of like psychic blindness. where you don't see something and then it appears is another way of like showing up in the car smoking a cigarette with a baseball cap or showing up, or, you know, other, they can come through in many ways, and this is just another way that they can come through. So even if they completely disappeared, they reappeared somehow.
I agree.
It's a sign and it's a hello from heaven. Absolutely. That's incredible. I would have been, it's so amazing because I would have been frantic because of the vacuuming. I would have been like, they're gone and I'm going to have to empty out my vacuum. Like,
I forgot that I did empty the vacuum, and yeah, we have my Dyson. So, and that was nasty. But I went looking for it.
Yeah. That's so funny. So,
yeah. And
so funny.
About that. But yeah, it's, you know, and I know that it was him. I know, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's nobody can make me not believe, you know, and I know a lot of people who believe wholeheartedly, but I think I believe more than they do because I've had so many experiences. So
yeah. You have. I want another list of stories because I want to have you back on because I can feel it. I know there's so many. Were you going through something at that time? Sometimes I think they come through, well, anytime, but sometimes it's particular and meaningful when, you know, it happens like on the birthday or on the day of the passing, or you're going through a rough time, or did it coincide with anything like that?
You know, the earrings one, I don't believe so. But with my uncle, I randomly get messages from him. Just, he's been gone since 1996. Yeah. So I randomly get messages from him, signs from him, just out of the blue. And I didn't until recently start kind of paying attention to when and what's happening in my life because, you know, I never thought about that. But in retrospect, I learned a lot when I was in my 20s that I should pay attention to that. And I did then, and then life got in the way. And, you know, so I've started paying attention again now and being more specific about things. So,
because you're in your 20s, when you were going through different things, I feel like the 20s are a time when we're working through a lot of things. Your childhood friend came through, which
is
amazing. I love
that you know, we were just in Indiana for an author event recently, and we went to the cemetery and where she's buried, and she was my friend from second grade through sixth grade, and then I moved out of state, but she was just a great kid, you know, and back then a great kid, and we kept in touch, you know, sporadically. This was before the internet and all that, but we kept in touch.
Yeah, before Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. And then I went to college at Indiana University and came to my dad's in Indianapolis right before the end of Christmas break. And he always read the obituaries, which I didn't
when
get
you were
then, but
20,
I do now.
Right?
Yes. And so he said, one of your friends died. And my friend's name was Nassim. She's from Pakistan. So she had a very unique name, and that's why he remembered it. And I said, who? And he said, Nassim. And so I looked at the obituary, and her wake or memorial was that evening. So I decided to go to it because I hadn't talked to her since probably my junior year in high school, and this was my sophomore year in college. And I went, and I didn't talk to her family because I didn't know if they'd remember me, you know, I felt a little uncomfortable about it. But shortly after that, I had a dream, and it was a dream where something was going on in the dream. You know, I was dreaming, but I was not participating in that. I was sitting, and Nassim came up to me, and she said, I owe you an apology. And she wanted to talk to me about how I didn't quite get it. And what had happened was, what she was apologizing for was, in high school, senior year or junior year in high school, I called her when I was in town visiting my dad, and we were supposed to get together, and we didn't. But I had talked to her on the phone, and she said, I'm sorry, I feel bad for not getting together. I didn't realize that I should have, or, you know, something along those lines. And then I said, don't worry about it. And then I had several things happened in my life in the 20s, you know, in my 20s. And every time, you know, I had boyfriends that broke up or whatever, but whenever there was something going on, she would appear in my dream. And it was the same thing where the dream was separate and she was counseling me and talking to me. And I remember it clearly. And, you know, I had a boyfriend that I dated for a couple of years and we broke up and I was upset about that. And she came to me in a dream and told me, you know, it's going to be okay. And, you know, just she just was there for such a long time in my dreams. I finally wrote her mother a letter and said, I don't know if you remember me, but, you know, your daughter is okay. And I wanted you to know that because she, you know, and so I went. So the next time I was in Indiana, I went specifically, her mother asked me to come see her and I did. And I still talk to the same sister that lives in Indianapolis now. And I went to that cemetery where she's, every time I'm in town in Indianapolis, I go, I go and see her because I feel like there's an even stronger connection than that childhood friendship.
True connection. I was going to say, how was the letter received? So it obviously sounds like they received it.
She, you know, and what's funny is it didn't even cross my mind that she might not like that, you know, because I was so naive at that point, you know, but I said, I dream about your daughter and it's not a dream where she's just there. She's talking to me about relevant things in my life. And, you know, she even, when my brother died in 1991 and I was 25, almost 25. And she, you know, came to me in a dream and said, you know, he's got a path to follow, but he'll be all right. And, you know, that, I mean, you know, she's a messenger to me and talking to me for reasons because of our connection, but there's still that personal element. She's not just passing along messages. There's that personal element. And I don't really dream about her anymore, which is kind of sad because, you know, I would like to have her visit me and, you know. But.
Yeah. It sounds like she was, you were meant to meet and she had something she could help you with. If, you know, she's in a certain place and at a certain path on her evolution and she was able to help you and at a certain time. It is sad that it's sad, but we you and I know that she's doing what she's supposed to be doing wherever
exactly.
She is. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's amazing that you say that you know it wasn't a, you know, the dreams are I often use the word dream, but it's a misnomer. It's really a visit. Mm-hmm. So dream is kind of that underwater feeling and it's not tactile, whereas a visit is very tactile and doesn't have that underwater feeling and feels real. So there's a huge difference. And I always say dream, but I really mean visit, and it's amazing. And someone might say, you know, why this friend? It doesn't sound like you know, like why wasn't it someone you are related to who's visiting you? But we don't know. For what every person we meet has a lesson for us. Every person, sometimes the people we learn the most from are the people we can't stand. They're the greatest people. but every single person, whether you like it or not, has something to teach us. And even in passing, so even if this was a friend for a brief time on Earth, you have a soul connection with her on another plane. And
I agree.
So our earthly connections, we can't judge the significance. We just don't know. And it sounds like you had a much deeper connection. And it's so nice that you keep in touch with her family. That's so sweet.
I'm glad.
And in case people are curious, she wasn't ill. She wasn't sick.
She was in a car accident in New York City.
Awful.
Yeah, it was really sad. And she was going to visit her sister that I talked to now. And she was killed instantly. She was very young and she was a very smart girl. You know, everybody loved her, beautiful girl. And she was destined to do great things, but maybe they just weren't here on Earth, you know.
Yeah.
So I think she's doing that somehow. So
Have you written have you been inspired by her to base a character on?
You know, I thought about that and yes, and it's changed a few different times and I'm still trying to figure out how I want to do it. But yes, I have a character that, I'm writing now that's in her 20s who has a friend that passes and then comes back, and she doesn't, the living person doesn't quite understand what's happening, and mm-hmm. It just doesn't make sense to her. So she has to process that. And then my friend Nassim's character stays around to help her through her life. That's kind of, you know, that's where the story is going. She just will be able to see her when she's not, you know, sleeping. So.
Right.
So, but yeah, but I've changed the story a couple different times, but I think I've settled on one. So I'm pretty excited about it.
I can't wait to read it. How do you write? So it takes me forever to write a book. How do you do it? What's your schedule? Well, are you on a set schedule?
I write every day. I've actually had to change it because when I wrote all the Angela books, which I'm still writing, those took me a while. You know, mm-hmm. I labored on those, and if I wasn't feeling the creative mood, I didn't write. And mm-hmm. I learned that that's not the way for me to do it, because I can be more productive if I push myself past that bump. And so what I started doing about 6 months ago was every morning I would, when it was work time, I would sit down and start writing, and I wrote until 2 o'clock every day. And with Angela's books, the Angela Panther books, I would go back the next day and read over what I wrote and change half of it. So I don't do that anymore. Wow. Now because I didn't get anywhere. So now I write, you know, I just write last for those few hours. And then I go through the book when it's completely done. And, you know, before I send it to my editor, and then it goes, you know, then I do a couple different versions of it, obviously with edits, but it's been tough. Yeah. I've been trying to publish these cozy mystery books, you know, one a month, and I took a break this month and said, I can't do this.
A month?
Yeah.
Oh my God, but it sounds
short.
Like you're very dead. Yeah.
I am.
It sounds
like
you're very disciplined, though.
I am. But I realized that, you know, I've given up other facets of my life to do that, and that's not right. You know, I don't mm-hmm. feel like a complete yeah. person. So I'm restructuring my schedule now and taking that, being less intense about that. And if I don't get my 6,000 to 10,000 words in a day, then I don't care. I don't berate
yeah.
myself for it.
It's but, okay.
yeah.
Yeah.
But that was a good lesson to learn, because now I know what I can do, but I know what I should do. And it's just a process of learning it, and it's exhausting. It was exhausting for those past few months.
Yeah. So. Well, you're very prolific. So what's the next release?
Oh, thank you. I just put on my website that I have an Angela Panther novella that's coming out probably the end of April. And that one I'm really excited about, because her Angela's ex-boyfriend from her first love dies and comes to visit her. And Angela has so much of me in her, because I wrote these books to honor my mom. And the first book is about what happened after my mom died, and how the path to leaving when my father died. So, it's very much, you know, she's very much like me in a lot of ways. And so I'm taking elements of my boyfriend from high school and college. I had the same boyfriend, and using him in this character that of the spirit that comes to see her and asks for help. So it's been a lot of fun. And my husband just laughs, because, you know, I will, I'll tell him, oh, you know, guess what we're doing in the book today? Because he knows all about my, you know, he knows about my
yeah.
high school
yeah.
college romance, and he laughs. He's like, oh, reliving the glory days, aren't you? But and that ex-boyfriend is still very much alive, so, you know, it's not truth in that.
Right.
But
you didn't kill him
off. Angela's a I didn't kill him off, not yet. But Angela's she's a fun character. She, you know, she's kind of snarky, and she's Italian, and you know, her Fran, her mom, they're constantly bickering. So it's fun to write that. And I hadn't written the stories in so long that I've been enjoying, you know, going back and visiting them. And it's fun. I'm enjoying
yeah.
it.
I love it.
So that's the next
and
thing.
You,
that's what I'm working on now.
Is Flying by the Seat of My Mom Jeans, the essay from an imperfect mom about her imperfect life, is that already out? Because it's under upcoming releases.
No, it's not out yet. And my family keeps giving me a hard time about that. Because it's all stories of things that have happened in my life, you know, and with my kids, and they're all funny stories. And everybody in my family, my stepmom, my kids, my cousins, they all want me to publish that. And it's not quite ready. And I think it's because I don't know how to explain it. It's just, there's so much I can put into it that I'm trying to take certain things out, you know, and make sure that it's all just little short, you know, two or three pages worth of stories. So, I'm looking forward to that.
Sounds like it's going to be fun, but I know what you mean. Like, kind of like when you know a sign is a sign, you know when a story is ready.
Yeah, you know, and it's just not there yet. I've been working on it a little more. I kind of had to put it aside for quite a while because I couldn't, it wasn't funny to me the more I looked at it. So I had to step away, and now I go back and read it and I'm like, okay, this is funny. So it's coming.
That helps.
That
helps. Well, you're very inspiring and I love all your stories. This is great.
Well,
thank you so much.
Thank you for doing this.
I'm definitely going to have to have you back. So, expect another call for when are you ready, Carolyn? I need more stories.
anytime.
what book should someone who's listening to this podcast who's interested in this kind of stuff? It sounds like they should start with the Angela Panther series.
Those are for people for this podcast that they would enjoy those. And the first one is Unfinished Business, and like I said, that's the 10 months between my parents passing, but the rest of them are mysteries, and there's always a true element in them to stories, you know, in life around my life or things that I know of happening. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like Ghost Whisperer, that TV show, meets Medium, the Medium TV show. That's kind of how they're written. They're written to help people that, you know, help spirits cross over and help the people that love them find their closure. So
I love it.
Yeah, they're fun.
I love it.
I enjoy them.
Perfect.
Thank you.
So your website is Carolyn Ritter Asmussen. I'm going to put it in the show notes. And where can everyone find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram as Carolyn Ritter Asmussen. And on Facebook, I have an author page that's Carolyn Ritter Asmussen author. So.
And you're on Twitter. Are you on Twitter?
I'm not anymore. I left Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
I left Twitter. I probably should get that off my website. Yeah. It was just too much.
Sounds good. Well, thank you again so much for doing this, and I will see you on Facebook.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sounds good. Thank you. Okay. And to everyone listening, thank you for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and sweet dreams.